Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Greater Albany, Utica, Watertown, and even Phoenix, Arizona, and now even the western suburbs of Boston, Massachusetts. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee to you. Ask about many of our exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. All it takes is a phone call. And you can not just be qualified, like pre-qualified, like many other, virtually every other lender will say, but an actual commitment, which means all you need to do is then find the property, and that we can make happen too. And that low rate and closing cost guarantee is something special too, because let's say you've already been to another lender and they've said, you know, we'll do X, Y, and Z for you, and they give you a qualification form. We will match that or beat it. And if we call it our second look program, and if we can't, we'll give you $50. So it's as easy as that, and that's in the form of a gift card. So please take advantage of that. Make sure you're getting the lowest rate and closing costs. The only way you can do that is 633-3700 at Hunt Mortgage. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800 and enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. Doesn't have to be ours. You drive by signs, you see all the stuff on a sign. Ignore it. Simply dial 631-4800 and you'll be prompted with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description. Then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. And keep in mind that this is faster than going to your phone and even typing in the address through Google. It's faster than that. Dial 631-4800, give them the number of the street, number of the house on the street that you want to look at or know about. It'll prompt you a set of street names, and you're gone from there, and you'll have all the information you need. We have a very active real estate market right now. There is a shortage of homes available here in Western New York, as there is across the whole country, and a very high number of well-qualified home buyers actively looking for a new home. And it may be the best time that I've ever seen for you to explore the market for the value, to see the value in your own home, because the fact of life is it may be higher than it's ever been. And from that standpoint, you may have even greater demand than you might think for that home. And the question that comes up always is, where will I go? Well, let us work with you on that, because we have certain solutions that might make this all a very, very good time to act, particularly as we enter the fall. 633-9400 is the Hunt Customer Service Center. And if you do call there and ask to speak to one of our professionals, they'll be able to say one thing to you that nobody else can tell you, and that's that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. So you have that guarantee in this whole process. And it's an amazing system available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA sales professional. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and even the Rochester Americans. And we also are supporters of our Buffalo Bisons as well. We are broadcast live here at WBN 930 AM. And if you'd like to participate in today's show, all you have to do is call us at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls, so join us on the air at Our House. And if you want to text us, it's 30930. You can lambaste us or ask us a question, whatever you'd like. And we've got a very special show for you to cover all kinds of ground today. In the studio with me is my old friend Jim Fink, the real estate reporter from Business First. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you back. It's been a while since you've been here, so let's get caught up a little bit. First of all, bring our listeners up to date on how you even got into this racket and how you developed real estate as a specialty.
Ironically, I came to Business First. I am a native Buffalonian, but for a while I was working for a daily paper up in Vermont, and also UPI. We were the UPI Bureau. My wife got very homesick, saying, called Jack Connors, and I said, do you happen to have an opening for a reporter? He did. That was in September of 87.
Wow.
And I came back, and they said, you're covering real estate and economic development. And I said, you realize I just spent the last couple of years as a police and fire reporter.
Well, that's a good background for our business, I'd say.
So, talk about a complete shift, but it's worked out. It's been interesting in the past 32 years observing the various peaks and valleys, cycles of both residential and commercial real estate. I know right now we're on a high both commercially and residentially, but obviously you and I talked a little bit a while ago. There's some warning signs out there. I believe we're talking ourselves into a recession, because all the economic indicators are that we still should be a strong economy. Interest rates are low. Consumer spending is still very active. Yet the clouds of recession are just hanging out there.
Well, you know, are they clouds or are they just words? I mean, it seems to me, if you look at the indicators, just like you said, and we look at a host of indicators, it's hard to see any one of them that would point towards recession. And let me go back to housing, because you brought that up as a sector of the economy. It would be easy to argue up until fairly recently that the housing sector was the only sector of the economy that really wasn't performing up to snuff, so to speak. But recently, in the last couple of months, even that has come back. So I'm trying to figure out what it is. And maybe from your perspective, you can tell me what that is. What, from a concrete sense, what indicators are there that we would be possibly heading into some kind of financial or economic wall out there?
I think it's more psychological than hard facts.
Okay.
I think
it's a kind of a malaise that Jimmy Carter used to talk about way
correct.
Back when.
But I think we're
but there's no foundation to it.
No, there isn't.
When Jimmy Carter was president, there was a foundation to it, as you know.
But there was very much a foundation. I remember my first car loan was 21% interest rate.
That's a foundation for disaster.
In 1979.
Right there.
Yeah, that was, those days are long gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, are there any hard facts? None that I can see, but it's a psychological, and, it's like the old saying, if you say something enough,
right,
it becomes reality. And I think, as I said in my first statement, I think we're talking ourselves into a recession,
mm-hmm,
because all the indicators are, that we shouldn't be even having this discussion. Interest rates are low. I mean, time on the residentially, time on the market is probably at an all-time low. Houses are selling quickly. There is still the shadow residential real estate market out there. People who may want to sell their house but don't want to because they're afraid they won't find a house to move into.
Mm-hmm.
And I know your agents are very adept at working through that. Mm-hmm. I know that from personal experience. So,
well, let's look at the factors really that would lead us towards a recession. And I've listened carefully over the last weeks and months to the various experts on this, read what I can read about it as well. There seem to be a few things that are looming, so to speak, that could drag us into some kind of economic slowdown in this country, which would be tough. Number one is the trade problems. That are seemingly not going away and don't seem like they're going to go away anytime soon. And I'm not so sure that they – but anyway, the fact that they're there and not going away, that's one major factor. Another factor –
that's a global issue over which locally we have no control.
We have no control. No, I'm not sure we have control over any of these things.
Yeah.
Because the second one is just pure politics. We get into a situation where one side says, I'm not going to do something no matter what the other side says. And so we have an impasse. We can't get anything done. And that alone, I think that's a good thing. The less the government does, I think the better off we all are. But let's assume for a second that is at least a psychological problem like you were referring to before. And the third reason that keeps coming up is just that. It's rhetoric. It's talk. It's a prevailing kind of wisdom that keeps cropping up in every discussion, to the point where people say, well, if everybody's saying it, it must therefore be true.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a talk about this among our executive group yesterday, and it was disturbing to think that, you know, as we looked at our own strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, that how often it came up as a threat, even though there was no material indicator to say that we should be concerned about it.
Exactly. And I think it goes back to, unfortunately, we become a very, with all due respect, an Instagram type Twitter mindset. So, you know, the quick 250 words or, you know, that's all people hear. They don't look behind the initial statement. Mm-hmm. Because, again, people say recession, but the numbers don't indicate that just yet. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, they've been talking recession for a couple of years, and the economy's still been strong. Now, obviously, you got a presidential election next year, which is looming, and as you alluded to, there's loggerheads across both aisles.
Almost every issue.
Yeah, whether it's healthcare, whether it's the economy, whether it's trade, you name it.
Let's get specific about Western New York, because we're not going to settle any of those matters here today.
No, we're not. It would take us several hours.
But what we can help our listeners to understand is what's going on right here in Western New York, and you have your fingers on the pulse of that whole environment. So let's talk about that. In that chair where you're sitting, just in the last several weeks, we've had Rocco Termini, Sam Savarino, Nick Sinatra, and even our county executive, which kind of covers the spectrum of the political and the actual boots on the ground doers in the real estate world, so to speak. And every one of them spoke very optimistically about the condition of our real estate industry, as you expect them to. Yeah. But almost all of them, in one way, shape, or form, brought things around to the relationship that our development community has to the government in various forms. Do we have a government at various levels that is receptive to the developer so that we actually can get projects done? And that, I guess that's one question. You can think about that one. Secondly, do we have the mechanisms in place through industrial development agencies, tax credits, et cetera, do we have the mechanism in place to affect a deal that could bring a development in to the market in such a way that it's actually can actually be absorbed by the market? So how do you see those two issues in particular?
Well, I'm going to start with government interference. What frustrates me and frustrates others is there's too much social engineering through economic development. Whether if you go to the county IDA, you have to have certain requirements in terms of who you hire. You have to be willing to open your books. I think sometimes they're being too aggressive with clawbacks, not taking a look at global conditions. There was the ECIDA worked out some clawbacks with a manufacturer out in Cheektowaga, Derrick Manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because their bread and butter is the oil and gas world, at a down cycle, they did not meet their job requirements. The county IDA was very quick to push on clawbacks, and as a result, that company, which their headquarters are in Houston, they won't do any more expansion in Western New York, or if they do, they will not go through the IDA. Mm-hmm. And I posed a question to some of the board members, okay, what are you going to do with GM? You know, GM's gotten a lot of incentives from the state and the county. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their job is very cyclical, their job numbers. Are you going to demand clawbacks on GM? And if you do, are you willing to pay the consequences? And, of course, they immediately backed off on that.
They did back off.
Yeah.
What they said, there would be no clawbacks.
Yeah.
So it's selective.
Yeah. Now you have, at least this year, the IDAs statewide avoided the prevailing wage issue. But that's going to come back in January. And that scares me.
What is that issue exactly? How does
that
work?
If you go to the IDA and you get any sort of tax breaks, you have to pay those that work on the project top prevailing union wages, whether you use union or non-union contractors.
Mm-hmm. Well, beyond
and that wipes out the IDA benefits in many regards.
Is there a reason to believe that the IDAs, I mean, obviously you indicate or you allude to the fact that they're politically charged, but that can change. There's an election coming up, and so because of the composition of the IDA, although it's, I believe, those seats are ultimately determined by the state, but they're upon recommendation of the county. Is that correct?
The county executive does have certain level appointments. There are certain ones that are mandated by state. Certain supervisors, Cheektowaga, Amherst, Tonawanda, are on the IDA board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here I'm going to switch, talk about the Amherst IDA. With Brian Culpa and his supervisor, he's changed the complexion, and they've become much more business-friendly. Those that were opposed are no longer on that board. For a while, they were very... Some of the board members were very anti-business. I had one board member, she's not on the board anymore, voted against an expansion by GEICO. GEICO, that was going to create 600 jobs. She voted against it because she said they could afford it. 600 jobs, and she voted. I mean, they got approved anyways, but really? You know.
We have a couple texts here, Jim, that I want to look at here. One says, I find it ironic that for years people hated the one entity had control of the waterfront, the NFTA. Now one entity has control of the waterfront. I think that's Erie County, EC.
Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation,
right. Okay.
Which is an arm of EC, Erie Empire State Development.
So what would you say to that texter?
I think the Buffalo waterfront has become much more user-friendly. The Buffalo Harbor State Park.
But in terms of the control issue, just like this.
Well, somebody has to control. I mean, who do you want to control the waterfront if not? You need somebody there to determine what happens.
And frankly, they're all about, at the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation, they're all about leveraging public dollars. In other words,
Brian Higgins was able to get $249 million in relicensing settlement dollars out of NYPA, New York Power Authority, which basically is underwriting what's happening on the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening on the waterfront would not have happened without those relicensing dollars. But somebody has to watch that and monitor that, and that's where the Erie Canal Harbor, and they are very, it's a very transparent organization. Robert Gioia, who you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, you'd expect nothing less than a transparent, open organization out of him.
He's spoken about that on the show.
Yeah.
And it is all, at least what he said here, is that it's all about leveraging public dollars. And that's really, I guess, the best way we have to look at this.
The public spoke, and a large chunk of the waterfront is people-friendly. It is a state park, much of the outer harbor. Is there some bricks and mortar development on there? Yes, you need some. I mean, you need bricks and mortar development to help pay for the parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the parks don't pay for themselves.
I hate to bounce around here, but while we're talking about that part of our geography, what are your thoughts about the Skyway?
Take it down.
Now, tell me why.
I think the reason it was built in 1955 does not exist in the year 2019. I think if you take it down, you're freeing up as much as 100 acres of development land along the waterfront. And I think in this day and age, there are alternatives. Quite frankly, the Skyway has been closed much of the summer where they've done repairs on it.
Last year, too.
And people have found alternate routes, Ohio Street or elsewhere.
I know every one of those routes. None of them are they all need work.
Yeah.
So something's got to be done anyway.
Right. But I do think that I've been an advocate. Now the plan that was approved, that won the City of Light, that was approved on Tuesday, whenever it was, will that be the be-all, end-all design? Probably not. It'll be tweaked. It'll be adjusted. There are elements of it that I'm sure will come under more scrutiny than other elements. The Tiff Street extension, for instance. The Michigan Street lift bridge. Those are things that...
Well, let me just stop you for a second. We're spending a lot of money on it right now. And there was an editorial in a competing paper that you might have seen this week about, I think it was Mr. Dr. Kowski, the professor,
yeah.
Who wrote that the about the architectural significance of the Skyway, and really when you, the vista that you see when you come in, and there's really no other city in the country that has such a kind of a gateway entrance into our downtown.
What about the Big Dig in Boston? It has a pretty...
The Big Dig, it's on the ground. I'm talking about...
But the new expressway that right along the TD Bank North entranceway into Boston, that's a pretty dramatic way.
It is dramatic, but the fact of life is this is ours, and yeah. It's already there. We don't have to do anything. It costs the city of Boston and people of Massachusetts tons
billions,
of money for, the, for that for
over
that project.
3 years, yeah.
And it was way, way, way over budget, which I suspect any project that we were to do now would be similar.
It would be more than $1 billion, I think, when they get done.
And we've just put all the money into redoing the Skyway. I mean, someone said today on one of the channels that no matter what plan is actually built, it's going to take a long time to get that done anyway.
Correct.
And but in the meantime, we've got things like a stadium and other things to consider.
I think there will be a stadium issue coming up sooner rather than later, depending on what the engineering report comes on the current stadium. So there'll be infrastructure issues connected to wherever the stadium is, whatever that issue is just resolved. But I do think when you're going over the Skyway, yeah, you get a great view of Buffalo, but you're going 55 miles an hour. You should be focusing on your driving, not on looking at the Seneca One Tower.
But we've talked about the expressway too,
yeah.
the 198 and speed limit there, and
yeah,
tragedy.
I think it was unfortunate what happened, but I do think the 30 mile an hour speed limit was a little bit of a knee jerk.
And I want to come back and have your opinion on a couple of things that we talked about with a couple of elected officials this week, and we'll be back with more from Our House to Yours with Jim Fink after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I've mentioned this before, but it is all new. As of April 30th, we have a whole new website there that does more than any of the real estate website I've ever seen, and it's the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts, and you'll find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage. So often we see this lovely old house that we really like, but we notice there's a few things wrong with it, and we want to get it fixed up, and we don't want to create a little money pit for ourselves. This mortgage allows you to find out exactly what you're in for through this Buy the Before and Live the After program, where you know exactly what you're in for, and you can roll the costs into your mortgage, which is an amazing program. 633-3700. And ask about our pre-purchase commitment when you call, and also our warm home loan. And don't forget about that second look program. If you've been to another lender and you want to just find out if everything is as good as it can be, we'll guarantee that for you and even pay you if we can't beat it. And that's the second look program at 633-3700. Just want to pick up the phone, ask any question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400. Ask one of our customer service reps to any question you want, and we will either answer it there or direct you to the appropriate professional who will answer that question, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Stop in to see them at one of our many open houses this weekend and ask about that seller security plan that's unique in our marketplace. I'm in the studio today with Jim Fink. Mr. Fink is the real estate reporter for Business First, and he's been on the job for, as we learned just a moment ago, 32 years. It's an amazing thing. But before we come back to Mr. Fink, I want to remind our listeners, if you don't know already, that the first annual Marcy Dandy's Memorial Family Bike Ride benefiting Connect Life and ECMC will be held next Saturday, September 28th, at the Delaware Park Ring Road by the Colvin entrance. Parking available at St. George's Church and Madai College. The honorary chairs of this event are Mayor Brown and his wife, Michelle. People of all ages and abilities are invited to attend. Bikes, trikes, scooters, and strollers are welcome. Visit www.dandysfamilyride.com for more riding options. So check that out today. It begins at 8 o'clock registration. 9:30 to 10:30 is the ride, and 10:30 to noon, there'll be music by DJ Milk, food trucks, kids bike radio, rodeo, and other fun. The cost is only $25 per adult, $10 for children. So register today. DendysFamilyRide.com.
Marcy was a great person.
She was a great person, fabulous person. And John's been on the show several times, and yeah. he's a great guest. Very interesting perspective, given his life in our community and all the things he's even currently doing, including chairing the ECMC Foundation, which is huge. Jim Fink, we were talking before about the Skyway, and we have a caller on the line who has a question about the Skyway. I guess this is Gary from Boston. Gary, how can we help you?
Morning. I like the Skyway. The view is fantastic, and like you said, probably the only one out there. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pie-in-the-sky project. They're going to have that elevator up to the Skyway. First of all, I thought they wanted to remove the Skyway. That's not doing it. Mm-hmm. Buffalo's a 20-minute city. Why do we want to make the drive time to the South Towns an hour city? Okay?
Okay.
And I think we should divert the money that possibly would come to the Skyway project to perhaps covering part of the 33 from Utica to Ferry, mm-hmm. and also beautify the Delaware Park 198. You know, new light standards, a median, mm-hmm. traffic down in the only in that one section, mm-hmm. and you know, leave the Skyway alone.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because we had a discussion this week, as I was mentioning to Mr. Fink, about that with a couple of our elected officials, and there is a lot of dialogue around this. What have you heard?
There's been.
Let's talk about Skyway for a second. What the rationale behind one of the rationales behind the selection of that particular model is that it frees up effectively 12 acres, they say, of development site in the waterfront.
It's actually 100 acres total, 12 closer to downtown.
But right where they take out the other part of the Skyway, that's 12 acres there. But go ahead.
But it's all told, it's about 100 acres, 12 right closer to downtown with this plan. And again, Gary, I want to go back to what I said earlier. There are elements of this that may survive. There are elements of this that will be tweaked or eliminated. As Peter will attest to, things that show up initially on paper and don't always translate well into reality.
Hardly.
Yeah. I got files at work of pretty pictures, and the final projects are sometimes 180 degrees opposite of what the pretty pictures show.
Well, let's go to what our caller was asking about also in terms of the Kensington Expressway and the fact that that
Which
really...
Which the governor about 5 years ago announced that they wanted to investigate covering the Kensington Expressway, and gone nowhere fast.
More than 12 years ago, Mayor Masiello was talking about the same thing. So we've got nowhere in 12 or 15 years.
These are all not quite seasonal, but periodic discussions that pop up.
But the thing that's not seasonal, that's enduring, is the fact that it divided our city and effectively destroyed one of the nicest neighborhoods anywhere in the world.
A Frederick Law Olmsted design neighborhood. And what it did was it made it easier. It helped the suburbs develop, but it hurt Buffalo for generations.
So if you have a zero-sum game population-wise and you suck the population out of the city to the suburbs, what have you gained?
Rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
There you go. Okay, well, on that pleasant note, we'll take another caller. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
John? Hey, Peter.
How are you doing, John?
Jim, I subscribe to Business First, and you do it.
Thank you.
Job. I enjoy reading your material.
Thank you.
You know, I was just calling about the Skyway. I was a little kid growing up in Buffalo, and I remember when the Skyway opened. That's how far I go back. And I do a lot of business in Buffalo, and my mom's in assisted living, in fact, in the Buffalo area. So I get up there quite a bit, and they use the Skyway quite a bit. And which I think is just an unbelievable gateway to downtown Buffalo. However, I have to admit, I have both hands on the wheel when I go over it. But the 190 along the river, I know there's been talk about moving that off the river, open up for parkland, and I would be against that only because I just think it's a nice gateway into the downtown Buffalo for visitors and even people that are around. It's just a beautiful drive. The similar thing with the Robert Moses in Niagara Falls. So I think they're underway in taking out the Robert Moses along the river there. So I would be in favor of keeping those waterways or those thoroughfares along the water for tourists and just the amenity of the views. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, moving the 190 closer to Niagara Street goes back to Jimmy Griffin when he was mayor. And really, I think given the development that's happened along Niagara Street and the Lower West Side, that's completely off the table. I mean, that's ancient history. The 190, no matter what you think about how Robert Moses designed it, it's not moving. It's staying where it is. The Robert Moses Parkway, speaking of Robert Moses, that section from downtown Niagara Falls to the Whirlpool Bridge, they have started making it more of a parkway. I'm not sure. It's too early to tell.
Is that the Greenway System program? Is
correct.
That?
Mm-hmm. They're still working on it, so it's too early to tell if there's going to be any economic development ripple effects. I know Blue Cardinal has bought a bunch of real estate along Main Street in Niagara Falls. We'll see what happens. But Niagara Falls, we could talk for hours about that.
Well, let's not.
Yeah.
We have a couple texts that I want you to comment on. Here's one that's just an observation. The Skyway is spectacular and the views are priceless. We've talked about that already, and I think there's many people, including our last caller, that feel that way. Next text says, why don't you develop the rat-infested, dilapidated, decaying, empty buildings that are directly on the waterfront instead of disrupting people's commute? Which buildings are those? I don't know which ones they are.
Are you talking about the NFTA terminals A and B?
I don't know. It's a text. I'm not sure what buildings he's talking about.
Well, Jerry Buckeye took down one building, mm-hmm. and hopefully he gets to build his condos there, apartments.
Are you talking about I guess.
The two buildings that the Erie Canal Harbor absorbed from the NFTA, which was what they call terminals A and B?
Mm-hmm.
Terminal, the smaller of the two, the one that's actually closer to the water, the NFTA is working, or I'm sorry, the ECI, Erie Canal Harbor Development, is working on a very preliminary development plan right now.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is talking with Steve Rinelli and Robert Gioia, within a year they'll have a game plan for that. They're thinking more of an event center.
I think any of our listeners, if they really want to know, should go down to the office down there and look at all the plans that are there, because it's extremely interesting what being contemplated.
Yeah, and the larger building, they're going to eventually put that up to the private sector. They're going to put it up for sale, mm-hmm. and let the private sector take their hands in developing that. Down the road.
Let's take one more caller before next break. This is Jay from Buffalo. Jay, how can we help you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to just tie a couple things or observations here.
Okay.
Since you brought up Jimmy Griffin, I wanted to say something about downtown. It was about 30 years ago or so when they said they needed a pedestrian mall downtown. That was going to remake downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They did this. So they put their pedestrian mall in, tied in with the subway thing. And what happened, and I have my own theory about it, but the retail business just disappeared,
mm-hmm.
from a wasteland. So what did they do? They had economic development, and they said, we got to bring cars back in. Mm-hmm. It was a huge mistake by the politicians and the people who make decisions.
Is that a surprise to you, Jay? Just out of curiosity. I mean,
well, what do you think?
This is, again, I mean, Jim was talking about the issue of social engineering earlier on the part of our politicians, which is, I guess, you know, how many of them see their job. But the fact of life is, this is nothing new. I mean, this happens all over the country, everywhere.
I wanted to bring a second point. The other day, and it was maybe the first time I had done this, and I can't believe it was, but I was leaving downtown about 4:30, 4:20.
Mm-hmm.
I went out. I got on the expressway at Tupper. I got up around, I want to say, the Best Street, Jefferson area. And what did I see but a long line of cars in the right-hand lane? This was at 4:30. They were trying to make an exit onto the 198, which has been turned into a 30-mile-an-hour thoroughfare. Mm-hmm. And my point being, an hour later, a little over an hour later, I came back from, I had to go out to Williamsville. I came back down. That line of cars in the right-hand lane was still there. Someone decided 30 miles an hour here is going to be the 198. All they have done is create a huge traffic jam.
Okay, well, that's, I think, an observation that many people have.
Yes, it goes back to what I said before, one of the breaks. It was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction over a tragic accident.
It was tragedy, and unfortunately, it's going to take something, I don't know, even greater to undo it. And we'll be right back with more from our upstairs after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. Call today, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Jim Fink. Mr. Fink is the real estate reporter for Business First, and we've been And really, beyond being a reporter, you get kind of an inside track on all kinds of good stuff going on and not so good stuff going on in our community.
And the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I like to call it.
And get a chance to comment on these things kind of with an open license, which is kind of fun, I guess, must be for you.
Ask my wife. she gets my commentary every night.
It must be interesting. I've given up on my commentary at home. It doesn't do much good. But anyway, we were talking about expressways and skyways, and I think we could talk about that for the next 10 years, and we probably wouldn't see much difference than we see today.
I have a gut feeling that the skyway is going to be the new Peace Bridge.
There you go. So let's go back to something that is happening, and that's the hardcore on-the-ground development that's taking place. What do you see as kind of the key developments in our, whether they be downtown or else out of downtown, that are kind of the next wave? What's the next best area? You know, we've seen all kinds of areas become hot and then stay hot, which is a good thing. But what's the next hot area or the hottest right now, let's say?
You're gonna think I'm crazy, but I'm going to say the east side.
The east side, okay, good.
And here's why. As the Buffalo Medical Campus continues to evolve, it's going to evolve more east than west. West is west and north and south is pretty
expensive.
Much expensive and spoken. A lot of it's spoken for. There's a lot of opportunity. I'm working on our annual, what we now call Build Western New York. So I'm going to give you a little sneak preview of what's coming up.
Please do.
In October. The block, just think about this. The block on Jefferson Avenue between Dodge and going down towards Delavan. There's about $60 million worth of development going on right now. You have on Broadway, the old Buffalo Forge site, Stuart Alexander and the late Rhonda Ricks, $50 million for residential, basically a residential conversion, taking what was vacant land and bringing it back to life. Peyton Barlow bought a building, an old furniture store, and they're moving their offices in there. As Mike Morgan says, it's time to practice what we preach. if anyone knows Peyton Barlow, they are historic restoration specialists. So,
and then there's the Sinatra development on Jefferson.
Yeah, which is part of that.
Which we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, and we were with a forum with Nick earlier this week, and he said people should be snapping up vacant lots on the east side and start thinking about townhouses and apartments because, again, as the medical campus grows, people are going to need a place to live. And now this is not gentrifying the east side. This is just a natural development. Dr. Dagher took the old travel lodge, is taking the old travel lodge site on Main Street. He's building a massive apartment building there. On Michigan Avenue, there's another big apartment project planned. You know, the east side is just like 7 or 8 years ago, the west side caught fire and Niagara Street caught fire. I think you're starting to see the timbers being lit here on the east side.
I also think development-wise, we finally learned, and you and I talked about this, we no longer chase these massive silver bullet developments. The focus is more on what I call the smaller to mid-range development, what Rocco Termini is doing on Chandler Street, what Sam Savarino has done on certain. You're not seeing these big ticket, you know, the days of Bass Pro are long gone.
And you know, we always hold our breath with those, and we hold our breath for years. And
worst thing you can do is put all your eggs in one economic development basket.
Well, going back to Adelphia, I mean, we've done this many yeah. times in this community, and it's never worked out, ever, that I can imagine. Yeah. The only things that have worked out, and you've seen this too, and I want your comments on it, are the ones where an individual or a small group takes a chance. They say, we're going to go and we're going to convert the Larkin Building. And we're going to turn into something. We're going to convert a whole neighborhood.
People ignored Larkin.
Or we go to Ohio Street and look what's happened down there. I mean,
yeah.
Or Riverworks. I mean, these are pioneers that take a huge gamble, and you know, God willing, that it works out.
And just yesterday, Doug Swift announced another $30 million project along Ganson Street 30, Kelly Island, a big golf center. So
this can be the Encore Golf Center.
Yeah, with Keith Blakely and Joe Karuba. But and again, I mean, your brother and Clark Thrasher, they could, you know, fill in a lot of these blanks because they've been very busy. Mm-hmm. And I think the way you've beefed up the commercial side, you know, bringing in Bob McDonald and Gunnar Trinolon.
Alan Hastings.
Yeah.
It's been a great addition to our organization. We're glad to have them there. But and as I said to our people the other day, when we were welcoming Alan and his group, there is a place for an independent broker in the commercial world. And as you know, as you saw what happened beginning 25, 30 years ago, is the developers themselves effectively built their own sales forces. Mm-hmm. And kind of withdrew from the independent broker community or went to them and said, bring us your deals, but by the way, we'll take your salespeople along the way. And I think that was a natural progression, but I think it's turning the other way around now.
I think having an independent broker not working for a specific company gives you a more logical answer when you're looking for commercial space or you know, residential space. I mean, you need that arm's length view.
I don't think anything's truly objective, but the fact of life is an independent broker can provide at least a fair comparison, objective point of view, not to mention the fact that an independent broker can also provide a negotiation posture that you couldn't possibly have if you were a user working directly with a developer.
I mean, someone like Clark Thrasher, I'm sorry if I'm singling out Clark, but he has such a institutional knowledge, and he's got such an encyclopedic knowledge. I mean, that's the type of guy you want working for you.
No question about it. One last, I've got a bunch of questions, but one I would like to ask you is your feeling about the new possibility of the former HSBC Tower turning into a tech center of sorts?
It is turning into.
Well, I know it is, but I mean, there's 38 floors.
Yeah.
Almost a million square feet. So what will you and I have talked before about the what the Urban Land Institute did and the university did, what our own company did when we represented the previous owner. The fact of life is that to use up that much space, the two largest buildings in Buffalo until very recently were vacant.
Yeah, and you don't forget the A&A's building too.
Well, that's the third.
Number three.
Yeah, so I mean, okay, so let's say that, is there enough capacity, do you think, there, first of all, to absorb the demand, and is there enough demand to fill that capacity?
I think it's, in terms of the Seneca One Tower, Buffalo is very much a lemming community. Everybody lines up to be number two. So I think now that M&T and 43 North are going in there, that gives people a comfort level about whatever happens. Now, all million square feet are not going to be commercial. Douglas Jamal has.
Well, they're already building apartments there. So
yeah, they're coming online. There's some retail and there's talk of potentially hospitality. Although I do think we're over hoteled at this point, until you resolve the convention center issue. Mm-hmm. So I think what you'll see is probably 40-50% of it office. The rest will be residential and hotel, whatever. Statler Tower, I don't know, Statler City. I've suggested to Mark Croce that the upper floors would be perfect for student housing. Just because, you know, Buff State, UB, Medi, Canisius are all looking for student housing. It would bring critical mass into downtown. And the problem with the Statler is a lot of those rooms have load-bearing walls. You can't knock them down.
Mm-hmm.
It was built to the standards in 1927, not 2008.
Hotel rooms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, college dorm rooms, that's, you know, college students, that's perfect, and it brings critical mass. There's certainly enough public transportation. It would help Buffalo immensely.
Do you, God knows. Do you think the... The Statler, I mean, one of the things that always depresses me when I drive by is see boarded up windows on our central square of our city.
Yes. You have a gorgeous new courthouse in one corner. You have City Hall.
The BAC project.
Yeah, which is coming back to life. Mm-hmm. You now have the new police and fire headquarters. And then you got the Statler City. I know when Mark Croce bought it, his intent was really to focus on the first couple floors as an event center. He's done that. He's done that very well.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have 15 other floors that had to be addressed at some point. And I do think the boarding up of the window, do something. Mm-hmm. You know, put pretty pictures of Buffalo or something there.
What do you think, how realistic is it the convention center would be tied to that building ultimately one day?
Of the three options under consideration, for a lot of reasons, financial, legal, speed of completion, makes the most sense to me. If you look mm-hmm. at the Cadeni report, Cadeni Architects, it's fairly detailed and makes the most sense. The problem is if you relocate the convention center down by Key Bank Center or allegedly the new stadium if it ever goes there, then you got to pick up all the infrastructure that supports the current convention center, restaurants, hotels, and relocate them. And by the way, you're going to have to give subsidy to the current hotels and restaurants. So you're creating more problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the other solution of extending the current convention center, you're talking about trying to, through eminent domain, acquire something like 24 properties. Expensive. It'll mm-hmm. take years. It can get right behind the Skyway. It's just, this the daughter of the Peace Bridge instead of the son of the Peace Bridge.
The projects that we talk about and never get done.
I got files of them.
Yeah, well, I bet you do. And unfortunately, we're going to have you back to talk about what's in those files, because I think it's important that our listeners understand the not only the history, but what the realistic prospects are for the future. You know, last couple minutes here. How would our listeners get in touch with you, share their thoughts with you, whatever?
Probably the best way is to contact me at Business First. My email, which is always probably the best way to get to me because I'm out more than I'm in, is jfink@ bizjournals.com. My work landline is 541-1611. And if you reach out to me, I do get back to you.
Jim Fink, real estate reporter for Business First, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.